This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
So I want you to imagine for a second that you are tasked with building, you know, the most advanced futuristic city in the world.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right, so you're designing these towering, gleaming skyscrapers. You've got flying cars, just the absolute works. And it looks incredible on a billboard. But then someone taps you on the shoulder and asks, hey, where are the power lines? Like, how does the plumbing actually work?
Yeah, the boring stuff.
Exactly. And you realize you spent all your time on the shiny skyline and completely forgot to build the grid underneath it. So that beautiful city is completely non-functional the second someone tries to move in and flip a light switch.
Right. I mean, it's basically just a very expensive movie set at that point.
It is. And honestly, that is kind of the perfect way to understand the massive, rapid shift that is happening in the global AI race right now. Because as of July 2026, the flashy stuff, the parlor tricks, that era is ending. Today, we are doing a deep dive into this monumental pivot.
Yeah, the race is really no longer just about building the quote-unquote smartest AI in a laboratory setting.
No, it's about building the most connected, efficient, and physical AI infrastructure. We're moving from the theoretical to the intensely practical.
We really are. And to understand the mechanics of how this is happening, we are looking at a really comprehensive briefing report on China's AI, robotics, semiconductor, and telecom landscape.
Which is just packed with data.
It is. And the commentary and foundational material for today's discussion were provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker. He has synthesized this absolute flurry of recent developments to show us what is really happening beneath the surface.
Okay, let's unpack this, because we, the public, I mean, you and me, we usually get so distracted by benchmark scores.
Right, right.
You know, like which AI can pass the bar exam faster, or which one writes a better screenplay. But lawyer Kyungjin Kim's report reveals a completely different battlefield.
Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the true battle isn't about those isolated achievements anymore. We have to look at how individual technologies, so the silicon chips, the massive language models, the telecommunications networks, how they are all essentially being forged into a single unified national grid.
A national grid. Okay, let's start right at the surface level then, where users actually interact with the software and the robots.
Yeah.
Because this shift from showing off to getting to work is incredibly stark.
Very stark, yeah.
The goals have dramatically shifted away from these flashy PR stunts to real-world, boring reliability. For example, look at Tencent recently. On July 24th, they transitioned their HI3 preview AI model to the official HI3 version. Mm-hmm. But the wild part is they did it automatically.
Wow.
Yeah, no separate migration process for their users. They literally just flipped the switch.
Which, I mean, that is practically unheard of in enterprise software. Usually an API migration, moving a corporate client from an old system to a new one, is a massive headache.
That's terrible.
It takes months of planning, testing for bugs, managing downtime. By doing this automatically, Tencent is signaling just an extreme level of confidence in their operating stability. And at the exact same time, look at DeepSeek.
Right. They had a big update, too.
Yeah. On July 24th as well, they instituted a hard deadline to completely eliminate their old API names. They are actively forcing a rapid transition for their corporate clients.
Which usually makes corporate clients absolutely furious.
Yeah.
But they're basically saying, look, we're moving forward. Keep up. It really sounds like the AI industry has stopped caring about a sports car's top speed on an empty test track.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they only care if it can handle the daily commute in rush hour traffic and actually pick up the groceries without stalling.
That is the perfect distinction. Cloud providers have realized that businesses don't buy test track speeds. They buy stability. And if we look at the physical world, the manufacturing and supply chains are accelerating commercialization precisely because the race is now about who can gather real-world data first.
Right. Data is everything.
But specifically in heavily regulated, messy environments.
Wait, what do you mean by messy environments? Like factories?
Factories, yeah, but also places like hospitals, elder care facilities, logistics hubs. These aren't clean, predictable laboratories. They are chaotic.
Which actually brings up a perfect example from a recent robotics showcase at the World Artificial Intelligence Conference, or WAIC, on July 21st. A company called Fourier was demonstrating their humanoid robots.
Oh, right. I saw the clips of this.
Yeah. And instead of having robots doing synchronized dancing or doing backflips off of scaffolding, which, you know, always goes viral on social media.
Always.
The robots were doing household chores. They were folding laundry. They were fetching items. They were actively assisting the elderly.
And, you know, from an engineering standpoint, folding laundry is infinitely harder than a backflip?
Hold on. A backflip seems like it requires so much more athleticism and balance.
A backflip is a controlled, physics-based math equation. You know the weight of the robot, you know the gravity, you know the thrust required. You program it once, and it executes in a predictable environment.
Okay, fair enough.
But a crumpled shirt. A robot has never seen that specific crumpled shirt before in its life. It doesn't know where the sleeves are until it picks it up.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about it like that.
Yeah, it has to use its cameras, process the visual data, calculate the fabric's weight and friction, and adjust its grip in milliseconds. Adapting to that chaos or to the unpredictable movements of an elderly patient, it requires constant real-time edge computing.
So it's basically flawlessly reacting to the unknown.
Exactly. It requires flawless physical reliability, not just a neat party trick.
It's literally the difference between a scripted video game and real life. But, okay, this naturally brings up a massive question for anyone following this space.
Mm-hmm.
How are Chinese companies pushing this rapid, heavy deployment when they are facing severe international restrictions?
Right, the hardware issue.
Yeah, I mean, they are largely cut off from top-tier U.S. chips, like the advanced NVIDIA GPUs that power almost every major AI model in the West.
This is where the engineering workarounds become a story of necessity driving innovation. They are attacking that hardware bottleneck at the system level.
Okay, so let's talk about Xiaohongshu's Big Mac system for a second. This was announced on July 22nd. This is a system designed to learn multiple types of data all at once.
Right.
Lawyer Kinjin Kim notes that by focusing heavily on the system layer, specifically the memory and the learning efficiency, they were able to boost training speeds by 1.08 to 1.9 times.
Which is a huge jump.
Massive. And this was an experiment based on a really large existing model, the Qwen 330B A3B. So they didn't magically get a faster microchip. They just completely optimized the memory and the learning pathway.
Think of it like this. If you are studying for a test, you could try to read faster. That's a faster chip. Or you could reorganize your desk so all your textbooks, your notes, and your highlighters are perfectly within reach, and you are learning the text and the diagrams at the exact same time.
Right, so you're not wasting time looking for a pen.
Exactly. That is memory and system optimization. It reduces the friction of how the data actually moves.
Which totally makes sense on a software level.
Mm-hmm.
But on an absolute massive physical scale, we have to look at Huawei. At that same WAIC event on July 17th, they unveiled the Ascend 950 SuperPod.
Right, the SuperPod.
Since they can't shrink a single chip down to atomic levels to make it faster because they are restricted from accessing that specific manufacturing equipment by export bans, they took 1,024 of their own cards and clustered them into a single supernode.
And the performance metrics on that cluster are just staggering. It achieves one EFLOP-S of FP8 performance with a 256 terabyte unified memory address space.
Okay, let's freeze right there because we definitely need to translate that for everyone listening. One EFLOP-S, FD8. What are we actually looking at here?
So to put one EFLOP-S in perspective, an exaflop is a billion calculations per second.
Billion.
Yeah. If every single person on Earth did one calculation per second, it would still take over 3 years to do what this cluster does in one single second.
That is terrifyingly fast.
It is. And the FP8 part, that just means 8-bit floating point. Essentially, they are trading unnecessary decimal point precision for raw, blistering speed.
So they don't need it to be perfect, they just need it to be fast.
Exactly. And AI doesn't always need to know a number to 10 decimal places to recognize a pattern. And the 256 terabyte unified memory means all 1,024 chips share the exact same massive pool of memory instantly, instead of asking each other for files.
But wait, pause on the 1,024 chips thing. Because I thought the whole problem in computing was that if you have to send data between chips, it creates a massive bottleneck. Like if I string two old laptops together, they don't become a supercomputer. They just lag while trying to talk to each other over a cable.
Right, exactly.
So how are they not just creating a giant traffic jam of data?
Well, that potential traffic jam is the whole game. This is a crucial point that lawyer Kinjin Kim emphasizes in his commentary. The focus has entirely moved from the capabilities of a single chip to the efficiency of the entire cluster.
Okay, so it's all about the connection.
Yes. Harnessing 1,024 chips means you have to build the perfect harness. If you use traditional copper wiring to connect them, the electrons literally cannot move fast enough.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and the chips would actually melt from the heat of the resistance.
So if you can't breed one giant impossibly fast super horse because of export bans. You just figure out how to perfectly harness 1,024 regular horses together. But how do they actually connect them, if not with copper?
Advanced packaging, massive liquid cooling systems that pump coolant directly over the hardware, and incredibly fast optical connections. They are literally using lasers to transmit data between the chips via light, completely bypassing the constraints of traditional copper wiring.
Lasers. Okay. So if these massive liquid-cooled laser-connected clusters of chips are the new engines of this AI grid, how is the actual data moving across the country? Because if we are talking about a national infrastructure, we have to look at the highway itself.
What's fascinating here is that the telecommunications companies are actually morphing into AI infrastructure providers.
Really? Like cell phone providers?
Yeah. They are no longer just the dumb pipes carrying your internet traffic or your text messages. They are becoming the brain itself.
Which is perfectly illustrated by China Telecom.
Mm.
On July 19th, they announced that their sharing platform is now managing over 100 EFLOPS of computing power.
That is just massive.
Right. That is a traditional telecom company operating at the compute scale of a top-tier global AI hyperscaler. And their network expansion is incredibly aggressive. By July 21st, their 5G network coverage had reached 330 cities.
And 6G is already moving fast, too.
Yeah. They have already finished phase one trials for 6G and entered phase two. They aren't just building fast internet to download movies quicker. They are building a nervous system that can handle real-time AI everywhere, all at once.
The strategy isn't just about being a country that runs AI applications well.
Yeah.
It is about being a country that embeds AI directly into its vast physical network. The telecom transmission, the compute scheduling, the models themselves, they are all becoming a single, indistinguishable entity.
And, you know, it isn't just hardware and fiber optic cables. It's the rule book, too. On July 23rd, the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIT, started pushing seven national standards directly into the industrial field.
Right.
And these standards regulate smart agents. These are AI programs doing complex tasks autonomously instead of humans. The government is actively standardizing how these agents identify themselves, how they discover each other, how they interact, and how they call upon tools.
This is perhaps the most profound shift we are discussing today. Because why mandate a standardized interaction protocol?
Yeah, why?
Because if an AI agent managing a warehouse needs to instantly negotiate with an AI agent managing a fleet of delivery trucks, they need a common language. They need a standardized protocol built into the infrastructure itself.
Wait, I have to push back on that a little bit, because standardizing how autonomous AI agents talk to each other on a national scale sounds incredibly complex and honestly a bit chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
Are we literally seeing the birth of an entirely new internet protocol, but strictly for AI?
Yes.
Like, instead of a human using a web browser to talk to a server, it's AI agents autonomously trading real-world resources.
That is exactly what is happening. Think about how HTTP became the standard protocol for web pages back in the 90s.
Okay, yeah.
Before HTTP, different networks couldn't easily share documents. But by standardizing it, the internet just exploded. We are seeing the foundational standards being laid down for autonomous agent interaction.
Wow.
So if a logistics AI needs fuel, it can instantly pull the energy grid's AI, negotiate a price based on real-time supply, and route a self-driving truck, all using a standardized government protocol.
That is wild. And it's not just domestic either. If you look at regional diplomacy, the APEC Digital and AI Ministerial Meeting recently passed the Chengdu Declaration on July 23rd.
Right, tying it all together.
Yeah, they are pushing AI as a core agenda for regional order and cooperation, essentially tying together telecom, data, and industrial transition across borders, which really zooms us out to the global stage and brings the geopolitical implications directly to your doorstep.
Yeah.
Because you cannot build a map this big without bumping into other global powers.
And the friction is highly visible right now. Just between July 22nd and 24th, we saw the U.S. White House directly target Moonshot AI's Kimi K3 model.
And just to be clear, as we unpack this part, we're looking strictly at what is stated in the sources, impartially reporting the landscape. U.S. publicly raised allegations that the Kimi K3 model was secretly trained by copying U.S. models, and they allege illicit access to restricted NVIDIA chips. Now, we aren't here to validate or invalidate those claims, but the fact that these allegations are being raised publicly at the highest levels of government shows the intensity of the standoff.
Absolutely. The broader takeaway for anyone analyzing this is the signaling. The U.S. is signaling multiple layered methods of containment. It's no longer just about banning the sale of physical chips.
It goes a lot deeper now.
It does. It includes restrictions on how models can be used, blocking public procurement of certain tech, and actively cracking down on computing resources routed through third-party countries.
And China's counter-strategy to that containment is fascinating. They aren't just digging trenches. They're expanding outward via open weights, incredibly low prices, and lightning-fast deployment.
We should probably clarify open weights for a moment. Instead of keeping the underlying architecture of their AI models a closely guarded corporate secret, you know, like keeping the recipe for Coca-Cola locked in a vault, they are releasing the weights, the core parameters that make the AI work, to the public.
But why give away the recipe? Doesn't that hurt their business?
Well, because if you give away a highly capable model for free or at rock bottom prices, developers all over the world will build their apps on top of your architecture.
Oh, I see.
You are trying to capture market share and make your infrastructure the default global standard simply by making it the most accessible.
Which brings us to the ultimate synthesis of what lawyer Kyungjin Kim is communicating in this briefing. If you are sitting anywhere else in the world, take South Korea as an example, but really this applies globally to you as a listener. You cannot just look at a model's test score anymore.
No, not at all.
If you judge the AI race purely on software benchmarks, you will be left entirely behind.
You really will. You can pour billions into training a massive language model that writes beautiful poetry, but if you don't have the integrated telecom grid to deploy it flawlessly into a hospital or an automated factory, that model is effectively useless on the global stage.
So what does this all actually mean for you? Whether you are a listener working in tech or sitting in a policy meeting or running a business, you need a completely new map of the terrain. You can't just ask, how smart is this AI?
Right.
You have to look at the memory architecture, the power grids, the liquid cooling supply chains, the optical links, the telecommunications networks, and the real-world pipelines for medical and manufacturing data. You have to look at all of it. At once.
It's all connected now.
Because as lawyer Kyungjin Kim points out, if you draw the map wrong, you can spend all the money in the world and still completely lose the initiative. Policy cannot be limited just to safety regulations and service rollouts. It must be infrastructure first.
It is a really sobering reality check. The plumbing matters way more than the skyline right now.
It really does. So let's do a quick recap of the journey we've just taken. We started with the realization that the race has moved away from flashy lab tests. No more backflipping robots, just machines that can reliably fold laundry and assist the elderly by processing chaos in real time.
Which is much harder.
Much harder. We looked at how massive 1,024 chip supernodes are bypassing hardware bans through sheer cluster coordination using liquid cooling and optical lasers. We saw telecom giants transforming into the actual brains of this new network, laying down the equivalent of an HTTP protocol for AI agents.
Yep.
And we explored the intense geopolitical battle over whose infrastructure will ultimately power the future.
And as we consider the immense scale of what we've discussed today, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
If AI is no longer just a piece of software that lives on your computer, but is actually becoming a physical utility, exactly like water or electricity, deeply intertwined with a nation's telecommunications and power grid.
Right.
What happens to global innovation when these massive, standardized, highly integrated regional grids become completely walled off from one another? Are we eventually going to end up with two entirely different, incompatible digital universes?
Wow. Building the futuristic city with two completely different sets of plumbing that can never, ever connect. It's an incredible shift to witness. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you. Keep looking at the infrastructure beneath the surface. And we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.